In the crowd and shed not a tear, but sometimes at night when the cold wind moans with a long black veil to cry, oh my bones, she walks this year. Visits my grave when the night winds swell. Nobody knows, nobody cares. Nobody knows but me. Nobody loved, nobody said. Nobody knows but me.
That is Miss Diamanda Galas, and I will be playing more Diamanda, and as well as today's feature will be an interview with her. This is the Ink Studs. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. For those of you who haven't been listening regularly to CITR lately, we are currently doing a funding drive here, raising cash to make this place better. And one of the things that would make this place better is not having squeaky chairs. And if you listen to the show much, you can hear how noisy it gets in here. You know, if I have to move around and stuff, you can hear it all. So think of your money going towards less distraction. It's actually been going really good to the funding drive. This is the last day of it. We are over at 5 o'clock in just under 3 hours, and we're currently at $17,582.87. Now, my goal is for us to pass 18,000. I would love to see us be able to pass 18,000 by the end of this hour, if not by the end of this hour, by the end of the drive, which is at 5 o'clock, ending with Crimes and Treasons, my good friends who come on after here. If you call now, 604-822-8648, and pledge, referencing the Inkstuds, you have a choice of many books, including the wonderful Red Color Elegy from Jordan Corley, Aya and Jeep City, or Jop City. This crazy Popeye, pirate pop-up book. Every time I say it, I can't say it right. Once Upon a Time, a weird, neat kids vampire book, as well as some comics, including Jamility by Ruta Modan, and King City Classics by John Porcellino, and this really neat art book from, I think it's from Princeton Architectural Press, which puts out some really crazy neat books called Hand Job. And it's got one guy who's been on the show before, Luke Ramsey, who has a weird kind of artist commune thing on the island. So check it out, as well as I have packages of local comics, which are all excellent. Inkstuds loves to interview comic artists, and we're very lucky, and we're the only real show like this in North America. I mean, there's a lot of shows elsewhere that do comic stuff, but we focus on alternative cartoonists and folks that don't get that regular press and folks that are really working on their own art form and really creating some fantastic stuff. So you're going to want to ask, why do I have an interview with Diamante Galas on when it's a comic book show? Well, occasionally I'm able to interview some really incredible, stellar artists in other fields, and Diamante is definitely an artist in her own right, using her voice and the piano as her medium. And she's actually playing in Vancouver on Saturday night at St. Andrew's Wesley's Cathedral at Nelson and Burrard. And I'm going, and I think you all should go too. So call us 604-822-8648, and here's first part of many parts of my interview with Diamante. And listener discretion be advised, she does like to cuss, and I'm okay with that.
Sure.
Your latest album, Guilty, Guilty, Guilty.
Yeah.
Tell me, who's guilty?
Well, you know, that question is just obvious. It's me, because it's an album of love songs, so who's guilty? You know, I mean, the person's falling in love. They're writing about ex-convicts, and all the guys are convicts. The guy's sitting there talking about killing his wife because, you know, or his girlfriend, lover, and the girlfriend. That's the Johnny Paycheck song. I haven't recorded that yet. The Ovie Wright number, it's not actually written by Ovie Wright, but he performed it the most. That number, he's just saying, look, you know, I shouldn't be put in the joint, because actually, the guy was hanging out with my girlfriend, and that's my girlfriend or my wife, you know, and I mean, you can understand why I would have to kill him. The law should have nothing to do with this. You know, and so that's all the songs are kind of like this, you know, they're all very, there's songs even Down So Low, the Tracy Nelson song, which in my estimation, Ellen McElwain sings the hell out of. You know who she is?
No.
A Canadian.
Oh. Not a very good Canuck, I guess.
No, that's all right, because I have no idea why a genius like Ellen McElwain has not been given gigantic stories, but that woman plays the crap out of the guitar. She sings her ass off. I discovered her when I was 17 years old, and I could not even believe what I was hearing. 18. And Ellen McElwain, it's E-L-L-E-N, and I'm going to probably spell it wrong, but you'll find it anyway. M-A-C. And I think it's E-W-A-I-N-E. The first version I heard, I think, might have been Tracy Nelson's and then Ellen, but it could have been the opposite way. I'm really not sure. Anyway, that song is talking about the fact that, the, you know, she she tried to make this relationship work, but there was nothing she could do about it. But, you know, she tried, and she realized that she was kind of wrong for the job, you know, and all that. The songs are, the songs basically admit that, you know, they admit that the choices were wrong and blah, blah, blah. So Guilty, you know, Guilty isn't, it's not a God, if anyone thinks it's a political record, they should just, you know, jump off a tree or something, because that's just insane. But so they're just, they're basically love songs, and I have a hell of a lot more where they came from. I learned, I've got another 35 that just haven't been recorded, and I learned these songs really, really fast often, and a lot of these things, like Autumn Leaves, that was, the performance on the records was the first performance of it with voice. It's the first performance, and that was the best performance, so we just left it.
The most primal, I guess, visceral.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just the best performance I did of it afterwards. So we just, these are all live tapes. Some fucking imbecile actually wrote, truly the most incredible thing I ever wrote. I read about my work, which is that I did a live performance of these albums so as not to be in competition with those who've done them in studios. And I just thought, you bloody imbecile, do you really think my record company's going to give me the fucking money to go into a studio and record this shit? You fucking idiot. I mean, oh yeah, that's a good one. That's a real good one, man. I like, you fucking moron. That's exactly why I did it. So I wouldn't have to be in competition, especially the way I sing, right, with some fucking, Jane Monheit? You know, I mean, what? What are we fucking talking about? These people are just so, you know, a lot of music journalists now, they got no fucking credentials at all. They should not even be able to write their fucking in their journal entries without being hit by a bolt of lightning from the sky. And they come up with these incredible analyses that they write as point, you know, as point blank analyses, that, you know, the final comment.
Yeah.
And I just fucking laugh. I'm saying, hey man, send me a check for $50,000. And then I'll record these songs, and then we can discuss. You know, but in point of fucking fact, I don't need to rehearse all that much, because I usually get it on the first take anyway. You know, but that's just because I've been playing music since I was 5. I don't need to go and sit there and do one phrase at a time for 65 days. What a fucking joke. I mean, I'm starting my own record company in America now, because it's just so ridiculous, the record business. You know, I'm just starting it, and I'll be selling my own records. You know what I mean? The whole business is just insane. Business is insane. You can't get my I bet you can't even get my records in Canada.
No, there's a really good record store I've actually gotten. Vancouver Zulu Records is very good for Zulu.
Well, my fucking congratulations to them. But I'm telling you, most of the time, you can get them in America, I guess. But, you know, a lot of the stuff is not reprinted. A lot of the stuff is impossible to get in Europe. Absolutely impossible. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's...
So most of it came out on Mute, which is from England, didn't it?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't even... I think Caroline might have distributed it, but Caroline has just gone down now. So, you know, the fate of these things is quite bizarre for artists. You know, that's why I just laugh about people saying, yeah, well, it's, you know, I would have been given the opportunity to record it in the studio. But I've refused it. I'm like, oh, yeah, right. That's right. I took another $50,000 and put it in a down payment for a house somewhere.
Well, that idea, the recorded thing, it's nowadays, it seems like the only real option for artists is to be performing live anyway, so why not capture what they have to live off?
Well, that's the damn truth. So what I do is, except for the last 2 years, because the guy I worked with, he was great, fucking great. But he didn't know how to record live, so I basically now I'm working with a guy who is, it's not why we split ways, we just had to split ways, but I'm working with a guy now who also is doing recordings of the shows. I mean, you know, even if it's on 2 tracks or 8 tracks or whatever, I don't give a fuck, you know, because his sound is so good, you know, and so that's just the way it's going at the moment. But, you know, that's what I've been doing the last several years, and it's because you know, there isn't that much money. There hasn't been that much money for what I do as far as recording it, going into a studio and recording it. That's very funny. And it just makes me laugh because these, so many of the artists from England do that. They have a lot of money there. These are mainstream artists, you know, where they, you know, they get to go in there and they, you know, spend years recording something. And I just laugh. I just think, my God, it took years to record that. I just can't believe it, because in the old days, you know, they'd put a lead sheet in front of you and you better do it that day.
Well, that's like how most of the blues guys would just
go in and
record something and they go back out to work it on the fields, right?
That's right. Or, well, even if they weren't in the field, they go back in the tour bus. That was it. You know,
yeah.
And we don't even have to go into the field, because I don't even know if most of those guys got even recorded, you know, but if it was a field recording, you know, which left out like tons of information. But just getting down to even the jazz world, you know, the jazz singers, I mean, Anita O'Day, I mean, she sure as shit didn't get to go into the studio and think about it for a month. She just had to take the lead sheet, and she'd sung the shit out of music since she was a little girl. She knew how to do it, and she did it in one take, and that was it. Now here's another song, record that one. And, you know, and the same for Doris Day, actually, the most underrated singer in the world, who I find myself alone in promoting, which is so bizarre when one considers my vocal style, that I should be the primary, you know, pusher of Doris Day. I mean, you know, these fucking bitches are sitting out there imitating Ella and Billie Holiday for God, until the death, you know, till death will, till the, you know, I mean, poor fucking Ella, man. She must be like just shrieking in whatever her grave is, because her life, she had to do 3 gigs a night.
Mm.
She had to go to Sweden, and then she'd have to be flying, and here she was, a diabetic. She'd have to fly then to Germany and then go to England. She'd have to do 3 gigs a night, you know, 1 at 6, 1 at 10, 1 at 2 in the morning. I mean, her lifestyle was impossible, incredible, and these people are ripping her off. And even if they are grateful, who the fuck cares? They should know better than that. They should know better. I mean, it's like Julian Schnabel ripping off those neo-expressionist guys. I mean, it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Lay off, man. Get a day job. I guess his film work is better, you know, but...
The best art is your own art, right?
Huh?
The best art is your own art, and the same could be said for performances when you take on your own style.
Don't imitate people. I don't like that. I don't like that. And I've had a lot of people imitate me too, and I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I don't believe that. You know, what is it? Imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. No, a check is the sincerest form of flattery. A check. You know, and that's a real sincere form of flattery. Pay my fucking rent for 10 years, and I'll like you. You know, or I'll be complimented. Don't be like imitating me and saying you never fucking heard of me until I have to expose your fucking ass, which I do, just for a laugh.
CITR 101.9 FM, Inkstuds. I did mention listener discretion. Diamanda likes to cuss. You're listening to an interview I did with Diamanda Galas. She is performing on Saturday night at St. Andrew's Wesley's Cathedral at Burrard Nelson. Just a reminder, folks, right now we are doing the funding drive. 604-822-8648. That is 604-822-8648. And we are trying to hit the 18,000 mark. I already got one pledge, so let's try and get rid of the rest of the books I have. What we have left is Aya from Yop City. It's a wonderful book from Drawn Quarterly. Really crazy Popeye... I can't say this. Pop-up pirate book. Pirate pop-up book. What's wrong with me? And everyone in the room was like gathering around it and oohs and ahs. This wonderful book. Once Upon a Time, a really neat looking, odd children's book about a vampire. Get it? Once Upon a Time. Jamalti from Rue du Modane, who I'll actually be interviewing next month. And I think it'll be fantastic. Her book, Jamalti, and the one she did before that, Exit Wounds, is just fantastic. And she is one of the premier folks in comics as well. Really neat art book called Hand Job. I think it's from Princeton Architectural Press, which is a really neat art book, really thick thing of things people done with their hands, and it includes local guy, Luke Ramsey, who is getting tons of international attention for the stuff he does on his Island Folds commune. And I have two packs of local goodies, including You Ain't No Dancer Volume 3, Histrionics from the Cloudscape Collective, and Robin Bougie's Cinema Sewer, Not for Kids. And to get any of these books, you can bid $30 and get choice of one. And the local packs count as one book, or $60, and you can get two of these books, $101.90, 101.9, get it, come on. You can choose from four of those, and et cetera, et cetera. The phone number to call is 604-822-8648, and come on, guys, let's pass 18 Gs, and hopefully we can bring another year of wonderful ink studs to you. This is the 3 years I've been doing this now, and I'm really happy, and I think we've done a pretty interesting thing here, and I have many more wonderful things coming up with ink studs. Here's some more Diamond Glass. Going to play some of her music, and then I'll play some more interview. Must get awkward.
Oh, not at all. Not awkward for me.
No.
Awkward for them when they've been lying about it for 10 years and then suddenly there's a little quote that they did in 1983 or 1993 and somebody finds it and sends it to me, then they're fucking finished. Because I think that it's, you know, it's just stupid to do that. You know, there should be a little gratitude in the world. And that's what I did with Patty Waters. I wanted fucking people to know who Patty Waters was. I was just like sick of the fact that they didn't know who Patty Waters was. If you don't know, because it may not be your particular field, that she did a version of Black is the Color of My True Love's Hair, which was, I mean, hair raising, and it was great. And It's the only thing of hers I heard, and I heard it 3 times, and that was it. And but because I wanted to raise public perception of her, I wrote that Patty Waters was one of my influences. Now, I don't think that really is that true, because, in fact, I don't sing like her. And not only that, I can't sing like her. She sings like her. I sing like me. But I was so sick of Yoko Ono lying about saying that I was influenced by Yoko Ono, who I'd never even heard of until halfway into my career, that I decided to play a joke on her and say that without Patty Waters, Yoko, and I wouldn't even have careers. I decided to just say that in an interview, and guess what? 25 journalists took my word for it and printed it, and I fucked Yoko really good. Isn't that great? Yeah, I fucked her so good. She was, like, answerable to all these questions. What do you mean? I never heard of Patty Waters. And I just laughed. I just thought, hey, man, can you spare brother a dime, you fucking bitch? Don't fucking tell me I was influenced by you. I hate the fucking Beatles, and I hated everything associated with the Beatles. Everything. And then later I heard, much later, I heard the record that John did with Yoko, and I thought it was very good. But I had never, never heard it, because I hated the Beatles so much.
Well, I guess maybe similar backgrounds between you and Yoko, and she just doesn't want to admit that someone...
Well, that's true. She had a husband who was a great classical pianist, avant-garde classical pianist, who would have introduced her to Kathy Berberian, who would have introduced her to, you know, all those guys like Ornette, who then she says, oh, yeah, you know, Ornette worked for me. Oh, please. Are you fucking kidding me? He might have played with her once for some money because she had more money than he did, but please. Ornette Coleman and Yoko, I mean, yeah, one record, but that's only because she could have fucking afforded it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, please, you know, Ornette Coleman. I mean, you know, other than going, doing little, like, insect noises or whatever, I mean, she just, like, she got no range. She's got no fucking range. She's just a fucking one-note samba. You know, everybody knows that. And,
yeah.
And that's why she doesn't get respect, and she doesn't deserve it either. None. And it's just, especially for Lion, I think it's, you know what I think would be great? If she said that without her, Britney Spears wouldn't have a career. Now that would be great. That would be great. And there would be some truth to that, because Britney sounds like a cockroach on, you know, fucking PCP. And I love that. That's why I love Britney. But, you know, just to say that she's influenced people like me, that's so banal. And it's such a lie.
You heard it here first. Britney Spears sounds like a cockroach on PCP. We do not necessarily endorse the viewpoints of Diamanda Glass, but we appreciate the input that she provides. I'm just kidding. It was a wonderful time being able to interview her, and we've interviewed so many great folks on Ink Studs, and keep pledging money, folks, to make sure we keep being able to interview these great folks. Well, we still will be able to, but this makes it easier and less squeaky on the chair. 604-822-8648. I'm going to play a track from Diamanda's album, Guilty, 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 and then some more in the interview. Keep listening, folks. 822-8648. That's 604-822-8648.
When you went away, I cried for so long. I wanted you to stay. But that was all wrong. The bed is come as a come on me. It's burned out a hole where my love used to be. But it's not losing you. has got me down so low, I just can't find another man to take your place. Now you know I love you, but that wasn't a lie. We both fell apart when things got too rough. I learned how to give now. But what goes wrong? Well, no one can touch me. The way you used to do. But it's not like you. That's got me down. Another man to take your place. I know you're a pain.
Performance in Vancouver.
Yes, sir.
At the end of the month.
Yes.
Let's not chat about despair.
Yeah, well, I'm confused because I have to ask you something, because I've read in two different places two different things about what I'm supposed to be doing on that night. And one is that I'm doing World AIDS Day, and the other is that I'm doing a performance which includes some of the works that I did for Mask of the Red Death and works from my new album.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps you should tell me what the buzz is, because I actually don't know.
I have no idea. I saw you I was expecting something. I saw you play, I guess, about 10 or 11 years ago in Vancouver.
Right.
And it was at the Starfish Room.
Oh, my God in heaven. My manager had the whole company blew up. I mean, it just dissolved. My ex-management, it was in 98. They dissolved right as Malediction and Prayer
mm-hmm.
came out. And we had to flim-flam our way, me and my lighting designer, into suddenly figuring out three gigs to do in between two gigs, one which was at Zellerbach Hall and one was some other big place. And, man, we just said, okay, you know any clubs or anything where we can, you know, afford this gig? We can afford this tour. And we just took these rooms, and I had a blast doing those gigs. I had a blast. Nobody believed that I was doing those places.
Well, it was fantastic. It was
Thank
this
you.
Small little room, and we all sat on the floor. And
I loved it. I fucking loved it, and I sat there in the kitchen putting my fucking makeup on with my makeup artist. We had a fucking blast, and then all these uppity motherfucking critics were like, I'm horrified to see her in a place like this. I'm like, oh, please. You should have seen me in 1974 on the street. You would have really liked that, too. Fuck you. Don't tell me where to play. I liked it a lot. It was great. And the people there were so professional and so sweet. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Those small places are really nice. They shouldn't. I mean, why do jazz people play those small places over and over again? There's a reason for it. They get treated really sweetly a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And the audience is there because they want to be there. you know, they're not hyped because they don't need to hype you to get 1,200 people there. You know what I mean?
Well, that was just it. It was a, you know, everyone was there for the same reason. And my question, I guess, from that is when I saw you perform was that it was a very kind of subdued, just you and the piano. Is that kind of a continuance of what you've been performing lately?
No. I perform so many different kinds of work, and in different countries they ask me to do different work. Like in Czechoslovakia, they'll ask me to do Shrajec. So mm-hmm. then I'll do Shrajec there, and then I'll come back and do, you know, Malediction and Prayer one place, and then I'll do Defecciones, which I don't know. I did Defecciones in Vancouver.
Oh, at the Vogue.
Yeah, and that was, you know, on the plank with the two microphones and the whole thing. So it's very, all this stuff is very, very different. And the problem is in every country they write, you know, now she's just doing works for voice and electronics. And then the other country they write, now she's just doing works for voice and piano. And the other country they write, now she's doing voice and piano with 13 languages and I can't understand any of them, and electronics, and I can't understand that. And it's basically on the basis of what they'll invite me to do. And on, what's happening is, which I'm really happy about, and I love Jim Smith. I mean, Jim Smith is sainted because Jim Smith has invited me to do all my work. Like Christy Edmonds in Portland, mm-hmm. she's invited me to do every single piece I've ever done. And that even when she was in Australia, she did the same thing. You know, she invited me to come there and do Defecciones, and then the other night, Guilty, 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 and then, you know, now that's a very rare person who will say, you go and you do all the kind of stuff that you do. Because I'm working on Necropolis and finishing Insecta and doing a piece called Hex, which is not even two mics, but it's a mic that's sort of, I don't know where it's going to be. It's an unusual situation, so I can use my hands, and I'll be moving around and doing a lot of electronic stuff and no piano at all. And I'm always doing new stuff. But the problem is, as I say, if you're not in the country where I'm doing it, you won't see it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And most countries, I have to say, do prefer voice and piano gigs, and the reason I think for this, it must be because they think they can get a bigger audience, and they want to fill a big hall so that, you know, they can pay so they can afford me, because I'm not going to do a gig for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's, and even in my hometown, no, I won't do a gig for nothing. It's just not worth it. I'm not doing it. So, you know, you have to look out for yourself that way, or someone will sort of just think that it's a hobby, you know. So what I did in Spain recently in Madrid was wonderful, because they asked me to inaugurate their festival. It was a very big festival. Festival de Otoño is the biggest festival in Spain. So I got to do one night where I did a lot of love songs, kind of La Serpiente Canta. I chose to do a lot of songs in French and Greek, and then a lot of the Guilty, Guilty, Guilty stuff. And then the next night, Songs of Exile, which uses a lot of signal processing in voice, and a very, very virtuosic use of the piano, and the piano is also processed, and it's a very completely different kind of performance, and that I was really happy about, because I got to do both kinds of work, you know, in the same city.
Mm-hmm.
That's very rare, very rare.
The devil has designed And it will to be sure that plenty of his black sheep die before he finds a cure. Oh Lord Jesus, do you think I serve my time? The aliens of the devil now are crawling up as high.
That's Diamanda Glass from her album The Singer. You've been listening to an interview I did with her earlier this month. She is performing on Saturday night at St. Andrew's Wesley Cathedral as well. On Sunday afternoon, she will be doing a talk, like as a panel discussion, having to do with World AIDS Day. So a lot of really interesting stuff surrounded by Diamanda this weekend. Once again, Saturday night at St. Andrew's Wesley Cathedral. CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Ink Studs. Normally I talk to cartoonists, but today I'm not. But that's okay. It's an interesting interview. We are currently doing the funding drive. We are $155 away from breaking 18 grand. Do you want to be the one that does it for us? I would love you forever. And I have a whole bunch of good comics to give you if you call in. I have From Yop City, a pirate pop-up book, Once Upon a Time, a crazy little kid's vampire book, Jamalti Wonderful by Rudo Montan, King City Classics by John Porcelino, some local comics, and Handjob, the crazy art book from Prison Architectural Press. I'm going to play the last of the interview I did with her and then maybe come back on and remind you folks to come call in 604-822-8648. That is 604-822-8648. Thank you very much. How taxing is a performance on yourself?
No, not taxing at all. Because, see, the thing about it, I got to tell you, is that I'm not until this guy that I'm working with now, who is the most professional guy I've ever worked with, did I know that you did not have to do a three-hour sound check on the day of the show. I mean, because every venue I went to, every venue I've gone to, you know, it has a different acoustical setup, right? So it's a different sound. Like if you're in a church, it's one thing. If you're in a concert hall, it's another thing. If you're in a theater hall, which is usually, you know, it's acoustically for speaking and being intelligibility for speaking, which means it sucks for music, really, unless you put some processing on the voice and stuff to give you this idea that you're in a musical hall. It demands a completely new sound check of every song, almost, not every song, but virtually, if their songs have a lot of variety to them. So I would do very long sound check and then do the show. So I would have already sung that day, let's see, 45 to warm up, 45 sound check to an hour and a half, another 25 to warm up. I would have already sung for 2 or 3 hours, and then I do the show. So, yeah, the show's the fun part. You know, the show's the fun part. It's all the other stuff that was just, you know, it's kind of taxing. And now I have an engineer who has performed with, he's worked with so many different people, from Sakamoto to the White Stripes to Barbara Streisand, for Christ's sake.
Sakamoto to Streisand, that's quite the variance.
I mean, this guy is, but he's a, I mean, I can't say that he felt Streisand was a big holiday, you know, but,
no.
You know, if she did a sound check at all, which is questionable, but the thing is, this guy is really a genius. So that means, what I mean by this is, he has worked with so many different artists, so many different singers, that he can go into a hall and he knows what he's dealing with, and we don't have to go through this thing where the Amanda gets to do two shows before we do the show at all. You know, so no, show's not taxing on me at all. Harder? Speaking on the phone, actually. No, speaking on the phone is hard because I scream. I usually yell on the phone because I'm a singer, and I try not to yell, and so then it kind of hurts my voice not to yell. Because this is my tendency, is to talk like this, you know?
That's fine.
Yeah, well, for you it's fine, but you should hear people get off the phone and say, you've given me fucking tinnitus just talking on the goddamn phone. Like, look, man, you know, I have a diaphragm. What am I supposed to do? The fucking phone is a useless piece of crap as far as I think of it as a microphone. It's not and, you know, whose fault is that? You know, it's a problem. Hmm. So this show is, at the moment, is going to be a combination of songs that I recorded since 1988 to songs that I've been working on recently, but with the theme, the definite theme of death, and the definite theme of a person who is being either being taken to is dying unexpectedly, prematurely. It's the AIDS theme. Really is the AIDS theme. But there are some songs that are more recent that are more generalized than that. But these are the. Let me just tell you what the songs are. So, they're songs that were from the Mask of the Red Death trilogy, Let's Not Chat About Despair, Were You There When They Crucified My Lord, but that's for voice and piano, so I don't think, yes, it was on the record, it was on the Singer record, Judgment Day, which was on the Singer record, Be Sure That My Grave Is Kept Clean, which is on the Singer record, Oh Death, which is on this record, Birds of Death, which was on the You Must Be Certain of the Devil record. Last Man Down, which was on the record with John Paul Jones, actually. Let My People Go, which has been on about 4 records.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven Have Mercy on the last record. Artemis on Saint of the Pit record. I'm just saying this for your reference, just in case you need to know what the songs are. And then amanes, which are Miroloya songs. These are amanes is a tradition that comes from Miroloistra, from Greece, the funeral, the dirge singers, but also from the Middle East. And by this I mean starting with Izmir, Smyrna, where it refers to a god, I always say, invented by despair. There, Amana means mother in Greek. So it's the last cry of the soldier on the dying soldier mm-hmm. on the field. And that is universal. It's universality. And all the Greek singers. Have you seen the film Rebetiko?
No.
Oh, God. If you like this kind of stuff, but it's. Rebetiko music was Greek music that was performed on oud, bouzouki, with the singers. They were sitting down in hashish clubs, and they would be drinking ouzo, and they were outlaws. They were all outlaws. They were prison songs, really. Most of the guys were in prison. They were underground community. They ended up, a lot of them were refugees from Turkey when the Turks slaughtered the Greeks, and they had this deportation, but which was in essence sending the Greeks inland to Turkey to slaughter the men, and then sending the women to Greece, or on boats in which they died. So it's a long tradition. Amanes are sung through the Middle East again, as I say, it was a contribution. It was a combination of the Assyrians, the Armenians, the Greeks, the Turks, the Arabs. We all have our own way of singing it, and we all were influenced by each other, you know, and the Persians too. I don't know if they do the amanes. I'm not sure about the Persians, whether they do the amanes. So I'm doing that. And then there's a song it's a poem by Ferdinand Freiligrath, and the spelling you can find if you look under Songs of Exile on my website. And he was a German writer. I hope he was German. He might have been Austrian. But he was a writer who wrote a song that Marlene Dietrich loved when she was growing up. Her mother taught it to her. And it was a song that basically talks about a person standing over a grave and saying, that person who knows she's going to be standing over the grave, and saying, you know this, I want to be as kind to this person who is sick as I can, because when this person is in the grave, there will no longer be a chance to speak to the person. I will have regretted every cruel word, and please forgive me for any cruel word I say to you as you're sick, you know. And that is so, there's a universality to that, and, mm-hmm. and a greatness to that. And that was her favorite song, and it was also delivered at her funeral. And I discovered it because I watched the Maximilian Schell film of Marlene Dietrich? Do you ever see it?
No.
Oh, I'm so glad to introduce this to you. It's a
so
film in which she refused
out.
To be photographed. She refused to be on film.
Wow.
So it was done with her in the next room and being a real bitch, a highly intelligent woman, highly, highly intelligent. I mean, and telling him how completely inadequate he was to direct this film. And saying, you don't even know anything about the culture, my culture, you're imbecile. And half the interview is done in German, and it's done in German and English. It's incredible. She was such an intellectual. She had learned all of Joseph von Sternberg's techniques, visual, you know, his lighting, so that when she worked with directors after him, she told them, she worked with a mirror and insisted that the lighting people light her exactly as he lit her. And she would not allow them to shoot until she was satisfied with her image in the mirror. I mean, that's a great dame right there, as far as I'm concerned.
She knows what she wants and how she's going to get it.
Fucking knows. I mean, but this bitch was so far intellectually above any of those women, including Greta Garbo. And she was just the top, you know, she just happened to have been an actress, but she could have been anything, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And she knew all the great poets of the day, all the great writers, all the great filmmakers, and exclusively associated with them and not actresses, except, you know, if she wanted to fuck one of them, you know, really. She was very, very bright. And she had this poem, and I saw the film, and she delivered the poem, and it was at this point where I believe that Shel was actually had to start crying, and I think that she started crying. It was a very incredible moment because she's such a hardcore dame, you know, and mm-hmm. I was very, very amazed by this, and I saw it in a book, and I just said, that's it, I'm doing it, and I did it for my mother because my mother was very, very ill and almost died at a particular time, and I was in her house and taking care of her in part, and it's in German, so I think I will probably perform. It's very hard to perform, but I wrote the music to it anyway, so I do it in German. So another piece will be a surprise piece. It's sung very often by Edith Piaf. I mean, it is her song, so I'm not going to say what it is, but it's quite apropos to the evening. And then there'll be some encores and so forth, but I don't like to bore myself, and I don't like to bore my audience, so I'm not going to just do a reprise of, you know, songs from Mask of the Red Death, because that's absurd. And not only that, when I said I was going to continue working on songs dealing with the epidemic, I was quite sincere in that, and the reason that they didn't all end up being songs specifically for people with AIDS is because I went through a very horrific bout of hepatitis C for mm-hmm. years and went through three treatment protocols for it and finally got rid of it. But I had to focus on my own illness, and there was no treatment for it at the time, so a lot of people died of liver failure.
CITR 101.9 FM, the Ink Studs. I'm almost done here. We are so close to hitting the 18,000 mark for the funding drive here. Please call in 604-822-8648. This has been my interview with Diamana Galas. I'll end off with a song of hers off of La Serpent Canta. La Serpenta Canta. And it's My World is Empty Without You. And keep listening, folks. Up next is Crimes and Treasons. 604-822-8648. And Diamanda, as a reminder, we'll be playing Saturday night, St. Andrew's Wesley Cathedral.
My world is empty without you, babe. My world is empty without you, babe. In darkness with memories, I know.
Creepy.